Greetings, friends. In our last program, we discussed the first example of an abomination of desolation that we found in the scriptures. Today, we're going to talk about the second example of an abomination of desolation. These are not the prophesied abomination of desolation, because that abomination of desolation will come in the future. But these are two examples or two types of the abomination of desolation. The second example of an abomination of desolation has to do with the second temple. The second temple began to be built by Ezra and Nehemiah, and then much later, Herod expanded the temple. So if you're studying in history books, very frequently you'll see this one referred to as Herod's temple. So this second abomination of desolation started, it was set up in 167 BC. And this abomination of desolation started at the hands of Antiochus Epiphanes. Now, it ended in 70 AD at the hands of Titus, a Roman general, and he destroyed the second temple. As I said in the previous program, you see three themes in an abomination of desolation. Those three themes are that the temple is destroyed, that's number one. Number two, the city of Jerusalem is destroyed. And number three, the people of Jerusalem and Judea are destroyed. Those three things occur in all three abominations of desolations. Today we're going to look in quite a bit of detail at Antiochus Epiphanes. And the reason why we're going to do that is because, first of all, we want to follow the lead of God. God spends a lot of time giving details about Antiochus Epiphanes, because if we understand these details, then when we see the abomination of desolation set up in the end time, we're going to be able to recall these details and see very similar patterns occurring in this abomination of desolation that will be set up. We'll be able to recognize it. So since God spends a lot of time on Antiochus Epiphanes, we're going to spend a lot of time on Antiochus Epiphanes. In fact, I would venture to say that of all of the evil people in the Bible, God has spent more time giving details in a prophetic sense of this person than any other person in the Bible. We have a lot of historical information about evil people. In other words, as they are doing their evil, or after they've done their evil, a writer comes along under the inspiration of God and writes about it. But in terms of a prophecy, prophesying something that would occur, this probably has the most scriptures on this person, this evil person. And this was because this abomination of desolation, it actually occurred in between the two testaments. In other words, after the writers of the Old Testament finished writing, and before the writers of the New Testament started writing, that's when this second abomination of desolation was actually set up. And so what God was doing was leaving in the scriptures a lot of detailed information for people to read during that intertestamentary time, because there were no living prophets to warn the people. And so God had his written word to warn the people, and he left a lot of detail. So again, we want to study this detail so that when the future abomination of desolation is set up, we will be able to recognize it. We will have God's written word, because God also warns us that there will come a time when the gospel will not be preached, when witnesses will fall silent. And so we need to have this written word and understand it and have it in our hearts and in our minds, so that God can bring it to our remembrance, so that again, when we see the abomination of desolation set up, we'll be able to recognize it. And before we actually turn to the book of Daniel and start reading in chapter 11, because that's where we're going, Daniel chapter 11, let me give you a very succinct definition of the abomination of desolation. And you'll see this coming out of the scriptures. It will jump out at you after I tell you what this definition is. So here it goes. The abomination of desolation is an end time, corrupt and carnal king that sets himself up in the Jerusalem temple as supreme ruler. And he causes his army to stop the daily sacrifice of the Jews in that temple, and eventually destroys the temple, destroys the city, and destroys the people. And this is the prelude to the Great Tribulation. You will notice this in all three abominations of desolations. The first two are types or examples of what the third one, the abomination of desolation, will be like. And in all three cases, it's a prelude to tribulation. Of course, the third and final fulfillment of the abomination of desolation will precede the Great Tribulation, which is the greatest tribulation that will ever befall the earth. So let's turn over now to Daniel chapter 11, and we'll start reading in verses 1 through 4. Now this occurred around what we're reading here. This occurred around 530 BC. So I'm giving you some of the historical context leading up to the reign of Antiochus Epiphanes. And Antiochus Epiphanes reigned and set up this abomination of desolation around 167 BC. But now I'm about to give you some details so you can see the historical context in which he arose. And we're going to go back to about 530 BC to start reading about how God had released the nation of Israel from this first abomination of desolation, which occurred with Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. He was the first one who set up an abomination of desolation when he destroyed Solomon's temple. That was the first temple. So the first abomination of desolation had to do with the first temple. Now, after that abomination of desolation, after God released the nation of Judah from Babylonian captivity, that's where this story begins. And this is going to lead up to the second abomination of desolation, which is the second destruction of the temple. Here we go in verse 1 of Daniel chapter 11. In verse 1, the angel Gabriel lets Daniel know about the angelic forces supporting the Jewish nation. In the first year of Darius the Mede, I supported and fortified him. That's what the scripture says. Now Darius destroyed Babylon and released the Jews around 530 BC. And he released them after the 70 years of captivity. And now in verse 2, Gabriel foretells the reign of four Persian kings from about 530 BC to 334 BC. And this is how the scripture describes it. Now I will tell you the truth. That is, he's about to explain in plain terms the true meaning of the visions of the great image and of the four beasts that was revealed in earlier chapters. There shall stand up three kings in Persia besides Darius, in whose reign this prophecy is dated. So besides Darius, who was actually reigning at the time of this prophecy, there shall stand up three kings. These three kings came to be Cyrus, Artaxerxes, and Ahasuerus. The scripture also says there shall be a fourth king, and he will be far richer than they all. This was fulfilled by Xerxes. Xerxes actually had an army consisting of about 800,000 men, and he had the wealth to support this massive army. And his expedition against Greece and the shameful defeat he met with is famous in history. And that's why the scripture says, by his strength, by Xerxes' strength, and his riches, he stirred up all against the realm of Greece. But Greece actually defeated him. And that's what we see in verses 3 through 4. And here it says, Gabriel foretells of Alexander's conquest and the partition of his kingdom. This happened in 334 BC when Alexander defeated the kingdom of Media and Persia, and this lasted until around 301 BC. So the scripture describes it like this: a mighty king shall stand up against the kings of Persia, and he shall rule with great power, and he's going to rule over many kingdoms, for he shall do according to his will. What this means is that after Alexander conquered Asia, he was actually worshipped as a god, and presumably he acted like a god. But when he stands up, his kingdom shall soon be broken and divided into four parts. When it says he shall soon be broken, Alexander only reigned for about 30 years. It was a very, very short reign. Actually, he reigned for less time than that, but this Grecian kingdom only lasted for about 30 years. But his reign itself was even less than that. And also, Alexander died at a very, very young age. I believe he was about 33 years of age when he died. So it says here, but when he stands up, Alexander, his kingdom shall soon be broken and divided into four parts, but not to his posterity, nor shall any of his successors reign according to his dominion. The understanding of this is that four of Alexander's generals, none of them family, ruled. They ruled Greece after Alexander abruptly died, but they were not of his family, and neither did they have the same large territories nor absolute power that Alexander actually exerted. So a perfect fulfillment of that scripture there. Then we drop down to Daniel chapter 11 and verses 5 through 20, because here we have foretold the rise and power of two great kingdoms. This is in Daniel chapter 11 verses 5 through 20. These two great kingdoms lasted from about 301 BC, which was the fall of the Grecian Empire, till about 175 BC. That's how long these two great kingdoms lasted. So we had the four generals that sprung out of Alexander's reign and his kingdom, but then two of these lines of generals actually became very great kingdoms. And the first one was the kingdom of Egypt from the line of Ptolemy Lagus, which you will hear it called the line of Ptolemy, and that's spelled P-T-O-L-E-M-Y. These were the Ptolemies, and this in Bible prophecy, this line, this kingdom of Egypt, this line of Ptolemy rulers is called the king of the south. But the second great kingdom that sprung forth out of Alexander's conquest and one of his four generals was the kingdom of Syria, and this is from the line of Seleucid Nicanor, and these are called the Seleucids. This kingdom of Syria, the Seleucid kingdom, is called in Bible prophecy the king of the north. So we have the king of the south, which is Egypt, and the king of the north, which is the kingdom of Syria. All right, and we can see the same history that we're talking about in Daniel verses 1 through Daniel chapter 11 verses 1 through 20. We can see that same history and prophecy in Daniel chapter 8 and verses 3 through 8. So let's turn there, please. This is going to be Daniel chapter 8 and verses 3 through 8. God makes it very, very plain. There's no wondering about this. All right. So it says here in verse 3, Daniel opened his eyes and saw standing before the river a ram which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. Now this is the Medo-Persian Empire that he's talking about. The two horns are the Medes and the Persians, and they ruled together. You can see verse 20 of Daniel chapter 8 to have that definition explain very, very clearly. It's very explicit that this is the Medo-Persian Empire. Then it says, I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, and no beast could stand before him, neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand. But he did according to his will and magnified himself. Now notice this next part. And as I was considering, behold, a he-goat came from the west over the face of the whole earth and did not touch the ground. This goat was running so fast that he didn't even appear to be touching the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. So what kingdom was this? This was the Greek Empire under Alexander the Great, and he was known to have a very, very swift army that did lots and lots of damage. And we can find this, again, very explicitly pointed out in verse 21 of Daniel chapter 8, that this is the Greek Empire under Alexander the Great. Continuing in the scripture, in the fury of his power, he smote the ram, broke his two horns, and trampled upon him. The he-goat magnified himself exceedingly, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and instead of it, there came up four notable horns toward the four winds of heaven. And again, these are Alexander's four generals. You can see that in verse 22 of chapter 8 explained very, very clearly.